Thank you for joining us at the Roundtable.
Brought to you by Community Education Arts, a nonprofit organization based in Noblesville, Indiana.
I'm Alice Cavanaugh Scober, President of CE Arts.
And I'm Sarah E. Morin, Secretary of CE Arts. Let's sit down
at the Roundtable. Welcome back as we continue our discussion of our 11 shortlisted books for our 2021 NICE project.
Would the next logical step be to each of us say a few of our favorites, the ones that are rising to the top for us?
Yes.
I will start with my top choice this year is Sula by Toni Morrison.
Okay, top choice, Sula.
And honestly, it's because the language is just, it's just so good. It's so rich. It's like every page you're just savoring dark chocolate, you know?
Yeah. And you're right. And there's a lot more dialogue in this than I thought. There is vernacular. Toni Morrison's is more grammatical things like using ain't and, you know, certain like dropping the G on the end of words. It's not quite as bad, for lack of a better word, as the phonetic vernacular stuff that's in Iola LaRoy. But they both have... Actually, that's really interesting, the difference, just depending on the years that they were written. But we always have to be careful that we are dealing with dialect and vernacular, no matter what book or what culture or what, you know, ethnicity or anything like that. We have to be aware of that.
Right. Yeah. I'll delve into that a little bit more. I do feel a little bit better about knowing that whatever grammatical and dialect choices there are were made by a Black author versus, say, Margaret Mitchell, a white author.
Sure. And that's true for both books, for Iola LaRoy and Sula. I will say that Sula has more descriptive. Iola LaRoy is dialogue driven, I would almost say. Sula has a lot more descriptive passages. And when I was looking at it this past weekend, I was like, you know, there's a passage of some dialogue that's really cool. And then I'd be like, oh, there's just a descriptive passage that's so beautiful. I mean, you know, the choices in Sula to find something that would work for our project are really good. So I'm going to say, I don't know if I want to say number one, but it's really high up, high up for me.
Sure. What's your number one?
My tip top number one.
I have a guess for you, but I'm not going to say.
Well, the trouble is my tip top number one is like tied to three parts for three different reasons. But I think I got the most excited about Tarzan of the Apes. For the reasons that I feel like we've got so many themes in it to work with. We've got isolation. We've got what's the old anthropological word? Ethnocentrism that is just rampant. We've got, you know, the gender, looking at gender issues and looking at Jane, the female character Jane would just be so fascinating. I think we've got, as far as the authors are concerned, we've got the whole kind of racist, ethnocentric view of Edgar Rice Burroughs himself, which is just like, God, meat on the bone, you wouldn't believe, you know. So I got very excited about that because I felt like it's this example of a book that in popular culture has morphed, much like Dracula did, into so much more than the original story. It's more, Tarzan of the Apes is like the epitome of, you know, this masculine identity almost. You know, I mean, how many generations of boys and their fathers built tree houses because of this book? You know, I mean, you know, I feel like this book is much like Dracula, where we tried to talk about this, the seductive evil, you know, of this monster and how that kind of morphed into the bad boy romanticized image of male domineering behavior. You know, to me, this book is sort of like that, where take a book that on its surface is like a boy's story, right? An innocent boy's story. Not really. Let's really look at it. Let's really look at these passages where Edgar Rice Burroughs imbues Tarzan with this, quote, instinct for white British male superiority. You know, that's not grounded in anything but Edgar Rice Burroughs's own life and feelings and colonialism and the time he was writing. There's, you know, it's not like a scientific reality. It's not like a biological reality. I feel like this is all very food for thought, fodder for the project. It's pretty high on my list. But the problem is, I also feel that way about the yellow wallpaper. So
that's like, what I thought would be your number one.
I mean, the yellow wallpaper is kind of like my other number one. So I kind of have a one and a one and a one and a half. I don't know what to call that.
Yeah, yellow wallpaper is probably number two or number three for me. Okay. So it's quite high.
Number two, just three.
A comment as you're typing for Tarzan, even though it's kind of middle of the list for me, it's one that I can be persuaded to put in the top four without any problem.
Okay.
And for some of the reasons you were saying, its role in pop culture.
Yeah.
You know, it is the granddaddy of a genre and a mentality.
Yeah. And I think the fact that it presents as a book that's more for boys than girls would be something that, as two women discussing, would be very interesting, because with the exception of the Three Musketeers and possibly the Odyssey, I don't feel like, Frankenstein. Let's just say that most of our books in the past years have been more oriented to the feminine in one way or another. Mm-hmm. And so picking a book that, especially if our other books are, for example, Sula, The Yellow Wallpaper, and then, you know, something else on our list, you know, this book would be that interesting kind of twist where we can really, really parse out the male psyche or something. I don't know. You know, I mean, it'd be really interesting to try to approach this book in context with some of the others. I mean, think of it in terms of with The Yellow Wallpaper. I mean, isolation. I mean, Tarzan is a baby. He's an infant left alone. His parents are dead. He's raised by apes. He has no one to talk. I mean, he doesn't have language, you know, human language. You know, he's completely isolated from the rest of humanity until, I can't remember the French guy's name. The French guy finds him, Darnot, until Darnot finds him. So, I mean, isolation and all that stuff, it's to me, that'd be fascinating discussions.
And I would be excited to do a scientific discussion about how is it inaccurate, but basically the science and the pseudoscience too of the era, how is it feeding into this view of, hey, some primates are just naturally superior.
I feel like in today's world, especially in America, that's a huge bonus with this book. And that sounds very crass to say it that way. But, you know, this myth of white superiority has to be dealt with. And as much as I love this book and this whole series of fun, adventurous, goofy novels that Edgar Rice Burroughs wrote, the element that he had in them based on his own prejudices and beliefs in terms of, you know, exotic races, as he put it, needs to be discussed and delved into, because it is because of books like that, because of mindsets like that, that we still have white supremacy today. Mm-hmm. And this idea that somehow white men are threatened by other men who aren't white. I mean, that's just crazy. But and the whole nature versus nurture, as far as that debate, that this book is it's right in there with all of those things. So this would probably be our most educational choice in a lot of ways if we chose it. You know, I'm thinking maybe I don't know, maybe one of our most, I don't know, we always pick educational choices, so
we always make them educational.
Exactly. Well, I think, and I should say Sula, I'm going to say Sula is up there. See, my problem is Sula, The Yellow Wallpaper, and Tarzan of the Apes are all kind of right up there. So I'll give Sula number three, just because I already put number one and two for The Yellow Wallpaper and Tarzan of the Apes. What would be your, well, let's just keep saying, I know you love Brave New World. I was sort of like more in favor of A Wrinkle in Time instead of Brave New World as kind of that sci-fi element. Do you feel those are equitable? I mean, they're not really equitable because one is a very adult story, one is more young adult story. But do you know what I mean about the sci-fi element? The
yeah, for sure. And even though my first instinct in making the original list was ranking Brave New World above Wrinkle in Time, I think our discussion last time kind of made me favor Wrinkle in Time because it's not just a dystopia. It features a dystopian world that Charles Wallace is stuck in. But it also does read like science fiction. It reads like fantasy. It has more humor. It has more charm. It just has more color in a way.
Yeah. So what number would you give it if you were giving it a number?
That's hard.
I'm kind of 3-4.
I would say I would probably place it probably a 4 or 5 because there's other ones that I think are tied with it for me. I'm up to eliminating Brave New World because I do think that Wrinkle in Time is stronger.
Okay. Join us next time as we continue our discussion of our 2021 NICE project.
This has been At the Roundtable with Alice
and Sarah E.
of Community Education Arts.
Our nonprofit organization is based in Noblesville, Indiana. You can find us online at cearts.org. We'd like to thank James Weston for writing our intro music and for his technical savvy.
Join us next time
at the Roundtable.